Welcome, Pewter Report readers, viewers, and listeners to a brand new edition of the Pewter Report podcast, energized by Celsius, the official energy drink of PewterReport.com and the Pewter Report podcast. Want to say hello to all of the Pewter people that are just filing in, getting into the chat for today's show, as we are going to talk about which Bucks will be cap casualties. Unfortunately, this happens every single year, but you got to make sure you get under the salary cap that is given by the NFL each season. And there are a number of different moves, maneuvers, and different things that the Bucks can do to create some more salary cap room so they can attempt to sign the likes of Lavonte David, Baker Mayfield, Mike Evans, and so on and so forth. Of course, Antoine Winfield Jr. as well. So someone, unfortunately, has to leave the team for those things to happen, and we will talk all about that on today's show and, of course, answer any questions and especially super chats from the Pewter people as well. I'm your host, Matt Matera. Joined with me is the face that runs the place at PewterReport.com. It is SR Scott Reynolds. Scott, how you doing on this Wednesday afternoon?
Doing good. It is hump day, and we've had a great week this week so far in terms of Bucks content. And it just continues with another great show today we have for you on tap, and then also tomorrow's show. And we'll preview that to kind of end the week. Tomorrow's show is going to be featuring our combine preview.
Yeah.
So those names might look familiar to you. That's Florida wide receiver Ricky Pearsall and Florida State wide receiver Keon Coleman. Both of those guys could be targets for the Buccaneers if they want to stay in-state and grab a receiver. Whether Mike Evans departs or not, they'll probably have to bolster their wide receiving core. Keep in mind, Chris Godwin's getting ready to enter a contract year. So maybe one of those guys, and we saw Ricky Pearsall really light it up at the Senior Bowl during this week of practice. 40-yard dash times, I think, for both of these guys, Matt, are going to be important. But receiver is just one of the positions that they're going to be looking at in the 2024 draft, and one of the positions we're going to be previewing tomorrow on our Bucks targets at the Combine show, getting ready for our week in Indy next week.
Yeah, very excited about it. I mean, even going back to the Senior Bowl, obviously Keon Coleman was not there, but Ricky Pearsall was a guy that maybe, like, I obviously knew of, but maybe didn't totally have my fixation on, and then all of a sudden you watch the way he could climb the ladder and get up after the football and his separation for sure. Definitely made him a guy that I paid more attention to and a player that is overall exciting. Now the Bucks aren't just going to draft players from Florida and Florida State and Miami or USF if the football team can have a bounce back, kind of like how the basketball team has been doing lately. But nonetheless, I mean, no one crushes the draft like PewterReport.com, especially Scott Reynolds and his Bucks best bets. So very excited about the combine next week in Indianapolis. Glad that it's staying there for another season.
So
we're going to preview it all tomorrow, myself and Adam Slavon, and very excited to break it all down with the Pewter people. And you guys always bring it with great questions and certain observations about some of your draft crushes as well. So I'm excited to see what everyone has to say about their own personal favorite players in this year's draft. So
Makes
it a lot more fun.
Yeah, and then we're not going to have a show on Monday, just to refresh everybody. I know we do roll call on Monday. We'll probably do that on Tuesday too. It might be a jam-packed show, so it might be a quick roll call on Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern time, because we'll be live in Indy. And you know what that means? That means the first day of the combine, they always have the general managers and head coaches from the teams give press conferences. And we get two press conferences each. We get a local media press conference where we get to ask more targeted questions, more Buccaneer-specific questions to both general manager Jason Light and Todd Bowles.
Yes.
And then they go up to the podium where everybody – that covers the NFL can ask them league-wide questions or questions pertaining to the Buccaneers, maybe the NFC South. So you will have a double-barreled day on Tuesday as we break down live from Indy, Jason Light and Todd Bowles press conference reaction. That's going to take place at 7 o'clock Tuesday night. So again, no Monday podcast We'll have a podcast tomorrow at 4, previewing the combine. And then on Tuesday night, after we dive into some of the interviews, we'll have our analysis and reaction to both Jason Light and Todd Bowles press conferences in Indianapolis. Again, Tuesday, 7 p.m. But Matt, one of the questions we're going to be asking Todd Bowles and Jason Light as it gets closer to free agency, where they're going to be adding some players, but also losing some players.
Yeah.
One of those guys I think they're going to let walk is Devin White, and we'll kind of get more confirmation from that. But this team might also be parting ways with some players, not just in free agency, but letting them go from a cap casualty standpoint.
Yeah.
And one of those players kind of saw the writing on the wall. He even addressed that at the last day of the season when he was cleaning out the locker. Shaq Barrett.
Yeah, Shaq was pretty blunt and honest when he spoke. And I give him all the credit in the world for, you know, going out and speaking to the media that day after the season when everyone's cleaning out their locker. No one, like, legitimately wants to do it. And I understand the season's done. You technically don't really have any other media obligations. And Shaq knew the question was coming, and he understands that he's in that type of situation, given that the contract that he signed a couple of seasons ago and the money that he gets season per season, when Shaq doesn't have a year that kind of lives up to the expectations of him, even coming through after a personal tragedy and the Achilles injury, still wasn't up to snuff. So Shaq is like probably the number one guy, maybe number two, depending on who you ask, on the radar of certain cap casualties. But the weird thing, Scott, is this doesn't even totally save the Bucks a ton of money. The biggest thing it really does is it opens a roster spot, especially on the defensive side of the football, because they do have to wait until after June 1st, if I'm not mistaken. And it's still if they cut Shaq Barrett, it's still going to be a $14 million cap hit. So you're thinking, wow, that's a lot. But if you cut him before June 1st, I believe it's around $26 million, which would be on the salary cap, which the Bucks definitely do not want that type of cap hit. So I'm just curious to get your thoughts. Like, I get it. Shaq had a down year, and he may not get back to, I'm not even going to say the 19.5 sack Shaq Barrett, but even, you know, the 10 sack Shaq Barrett, that's tough to say in a row, but the 10 sacks that Shaq Barrett got a couple of seasons later. I get it, it was a down year, but is it still worth it to eat all of that money for a guy that has meant a lot to this team and I think still provides value, maybe not on the field, even though that's the most important value that any of these players can bring? That's a lot of money to eat to just say, hey, we're going to open up a roster spot and hope someone that takes his position is going to be worth eating $14 million.
Yeah, and really, you could make the argument, too. I know the sack number was down, the production was, but the pressures, you know, while they were down, too, still the best on the team, right? So sometimes you got to take a step back to take a step forward. And I think that there's only so many snaps you're going to get in a game, only so many reps. And, Matt, you do the snap counts on Mondays, and you look at that, and we saw Yaya Diaby's numbers rise in terms of his snaps. So he's penciled in as one of those starters. And I think they're looking at Joe Tryon-Shoyinka, and they're not going to give him the fifth-year option, which would be a significant raise. So, in essence, this is Joe Tryon-Shoyinka's contract year that he's coming into here. Even though he's a first-rounder, he won't have that fifth year. They're going to make him play this year and see what happens. He did increase his sack total from 4 to 5. He got that strip sack, which was a big one in Carolina in Week 18. And he does some things that Todd Bowles likes. He's gotten better against the run. He actually can drop in coverage. He's very athletic, but he just hasn't put it all together yet. It's taken forever for him to kind of realize his potential, and I'm not sure that he's going to quite get there. Mm-hmm. But maybe by creating that roster spot, that opening on the depth chart, it gives him more of an opportunity. You're paying Anthony Nelson. This is his second year of a two-year deal. You know, he's making a pretty good chunk of change when it comes to, you know, his salary for what he is, which is typically that third guy off the bench. And, you know, Nelson, he's got a cap value of $5.4 million this year and a base salary of $4 million. So you want him to maybe earn some of that playing time. And when he's had more opportunities, if you look back at the 2022 season when Barrett was injured, yeah, and missed the second half of the season with that Achilles, it was Anthony Nelson that led the team with 3 forced fumbles, and he, yep, had a career high, I want to say, what, 4 sacks, 4.5?
He led all, not the team, but he led all outside linebackers, yeah, in sacks, which I think is important. Yeah,
I mean, 5.5, I think.
Yeah, and yeah, it's interesting you bring up Anthony Nelson because, you know, he may not lead the team in pressures or playing time or things like that, but for whatever reason, and I don't think you could put a stat or any analytics behind it, but Anthony Nelson seems to just always be in the mix one way or another. He seems to always just kind of be Johnny on the spot, which,
right,
again, you can't quantify that. But if you have that type of luck to you, he seems to always just make a play in a certain moment when, yeah, you need it. Didn't necessarily happen last year, but again, because Yaya Diaby took such a leap and
right,
JTS got demoted, which I think even – I always felt the best way to motivate a player, really anyone just working, is give them the fear of termination or just demotion and, yeah, things like that. Because that hits the ego, I think, more than anything else. And I think that actually, in an odd way, helped Joe Tryon-Shoyinka to, yeah, really get that motor going and try to find something different in his game that, you know, helped with the forced fumble against Carolina, yeah, late in the season. And I hope that continues next year.
Benching, it kind of cuts out the complacency, doesn't it?
It does.
if you're a complacent starter and all of a sudden, you know, you don't have that starting job anymore, and you see your reps decrease, you're going to end up hopefully making the most of your decreased reps. And if you're going from, say, 50 to 45 or so down to 20 or 25, you know, you better make those reps count when you're in the game. And yeah, and I think to Joe Tryon-Shoyinka's credit, he played better down the stretch. And maybe that was a result of Yaya Diaby replacing him in the starting lineup. But I think the biggest thing, too, and this might come across as a little unsettling for Buccaneer fans who might view the Glazers being greedy or whatever. But aside from that roster spot that, you know, a younger player, maybe it's Marquise Watts, if he elevates this year, maybe it's Jose Ramirez, if, yep, he makes the jump from the practice squad to the active roster, or maybe it's Nelson in a contract year elevating his performance, or Joe Tryon-Shoyinka doing that, or this team goes out and drafts an edge rusher in the first or second round, mm-hmm, Matt, and says, you're going to supplant JTS as the starter or battle with him for the right to replace Shaq Barrett opposite Yaya Diaby. The other thing is, and this is important, Shaq Barrett, he's due to, you know, to have about $14 million worth of cash, you know, due him in terms of bonus money and base salary. And so the Glazers have shelled out a ton of money during the Bucs Super Bowl run, right? And this is an opportunity where they can maybe recoup some of that money and not have to pay that out. And you know, I think when you factor in Shaq's age, he'll be 32 next fall, coming off the Achilles. He didn't have that rebound year. Maybe it's coming this year, but he still has a very high salary cap number for, yeah, his production. He's got a cap number of just over $14 million. And again, he even alluded to that in that final press conference saying, yeah, you know, I'm not sure if I'm going to be here next year. Yeah. I'm paraphrasing, but the production, does it match the salary? You know, so I would not be surprised if they move on from Shaq. And again, that's a Super Bowl guy, right? And Devin White's another one. So this team has already seen Ryan Jensen retire, and now two more members of that Super Bowl team. Gosh, it seemed like just yesterday, right?
I know.
This team was winning the Super Bowl, and now they're going to be whittled down to around 10. And you've got Mike Evans, who's a free agent as a Super Bowl champion. Same with Levante David. Will they return? Pretty soon, in a year or two, the number of Super Bowl champions on this team will be less than 10. And it could be sooner rather than later, especially if Shaq gets cut, as we expect he might.
Yeah, it's sad to say. And it's also a credit to Jason Light and just the overall Bucs staff and the coaching staff as well. Because in particular, that defense, when they won the Super Bowl in 2020, I think like anywhere from 8 to 9, maybe even 10 of the starters on defense were all on, I think it was 9 of the 11 starters were all on their like first contracts in the NFL. Not, yeah, all rookies, but on that first contract. So within the first 4 years of, of their career. And then, you know, obviously you start winning and free agency happens. And that's why, you know, Jordan Whitehead was out of town. And then you get regression of play, like someone like Devin White. So, I mean, that's just the nature of the game and football. But yeah, it is kind of crazy because I'm with you. It does feel like it was like yesterday that the Bucs won the Super Bowl. And now we're closing in on like 4 or 5 years since they did it. So obviously different names, different faces are going to come about. And it's so interesting because for the past couple of seasons, like, yes, JPP was there and then he wasn't. And you draft the Yaya Diaby. But when you had Shaq and Anthony Nelson and even JTS for a while, there was so much stability with that outside linebacker room of just familiar faces, maybe not always the production that you wanted, but it wasn't like a revolving door, kind of like, you know, what safety has been for the past couple of years outside of Antoine Winfield Jr. And then you look at next season, we don't have to look that far into it because we got to look at this offseason as well. But if Shaq gets let go, JTS is on the last year of his deal, Anthony Nelson on the last year of his deal, looking down the road, you're really only going to have like Yaya Diaby and Marquise Watts and Jose Ramirez as well. It's just a lot of young, unproven guys. Kalijah Kancey as well as a defensive tackle. But on the edge, it's like really just Yaya. And then who knows what's behind door number two, which is kind of crazy to think. But speaking of Mike Evans, who Scott had brought up a moment ago, we have a super chat from Smitty. Yeah. Thank you, Smitty, for this $9.99 super chat, who says, assuming Baker is waiting for Mike to sign before even looking at the Bucs, if we lose both, obviously quarterback and wide receiver become priority 1 and 1A, who do they target or do they let Trask rock out for a top five pick?
That's a good question. I mean, if they lose both, I think they're going to go get a free agent quarterback.
A couple available.
Yeah. It might be a guy like Gardner Minshew, who is not your ideal guy, but at least you bring somebody in with Trask. You probably draft a quarterback, but we've seen even, and remember back in 2014, the team had just signed Josh McCown and they had Mike Glennon on the roster. There was some speculation, not from Pewter Report, we never said this, but some people believe Johnny Manziel was on the Bucs radar. It was never the case. And they ended up drafting a wide receiver instead of a quarterback. And that was a year where they thought maybe, you know, with Josh McCown, you know, coming, he would be a stopgap kind of guy. Mike Glennon was drafted by the previous regime, Greg Schiano. So maybe they draft a Blake Bortles. Well, he went ahead of Tampa Bay, surprisingly. And, you know, and then is maybe Teddy Bridgewater, maybe Derek Carr. That was the talk. And they ended up going with Mike Evans instead, a wide receiver a quarterback. And yes, thank goodness, because he ended up being the right guy out of all of the guys I mentioned. So I think at 26, the Buccaneers are in a position to draft the best player available. The good news is they've got plenty of different holes to fill in terms of ways they could go. So they're not pigeonholed into this team must draft a defensive tackle in the first round, right? They did that last year. But
yeah,
so it could be interior offensive line. It could be wide receiver. It could be a quarterback if the right one's there. It could be an edge rusher. It could be a safety. There's a lot of different ways they could go, so they're not beholden to really target one guy and reach. They have the ability to literally take the best player available, and that's always the best approach. Now, the bad side is they have a lot of holes to fill. So
they do.
It's not like it was in 2021 where this team re-signed all their starters from the Super Bowl and they could pick a Joe Tryon Chiwenga and we'll draft the quarterback in the second round and Kyle Trask. And they didn't have any immediate starters that they had to draft and plug in into action as rookies. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword. But I would not be surprised at all if they took a wide receiver. If they re-sign Baker Mayfield, I don't think they're going to draft a quarterback in the first round, Matt, because
I agree.
You need to. Whoever the first-round pick is, he's got to see the field as a starter. And that's why we have had in our first two mock drafts Alabama's Chris Braswell, the outside linebacker, because if you cut Shaq Barrett, as we're talking about in today's show, then you could supplant him over Joe Tryon Chiwenga opposite Yaya Diaby, and there's your first-round starter. The second mock draft, Duke's left tackle, who would move inside to either guard or center, Graham Barton, right? Again, that's an immediate starter, just like Cody Mauch was a starter his rookie year. Same with Tristan Wirfs along the offensive line. If you're drafting a guy in the first or second round, boom, he's a starter. And so those were the first two picks there. We'll see after the combine, Matt, who we serve up for the Buccaneers in our third mock draft, which will be coming out in 2 weeks.
I hope we start seeing a trend in the NFL that teams that do need a quarterback don't immediately panic and say, we need to get a quarterback. We need to get a quarterback, any quarterback possible. I'm not just talking about the Bucs. I'm talking about the NFL as a whole, because I don't think there's any shame or anything wrong in saying, yes, we need a quarterback, but let's build the heck out of our offense first, and then we can insert a quarterback. I think the Patriots will be – it'll be very telling what they do with the third pick if they decide to go quarterback or go with Marvin Harrison Jr. And I look at a team such as the Steelers a couple of seasons ago. When they drafted Kenny Pickett, everybody before the draft was saying, this is a bad quarterback class. This is not the year you want to be drafting a quarterback, especially in the first round. And part of me feels like the Steelers drafted Kenny Pickett because they were thinking, we need a quarterback. We have to get a quarterback now, when they probably could have even waited till the second round to get Kenny Pickett or whatever the case may be. So as it pertains to the Bucs, I don't want this to happen where they lose Baker and Mike Evans. You know, hopefully they can re-sign both. But in the event that they don't, maybe they can at least get one. Yep. If they still do need – if they do lose both, though, I don't think – obviously, the big guys are going to be off the board right away, and they're not going to trade up. I just really hope that the Bucs don't go like, oh, Michael Penix. Like, if you don't like Michael Penix, then don't draft Michael Penix. Don't just pick him because, hey, we need a quarterback, and he happens to play that position. Or J.J. McCarthy late in the first round.
Right.
Or, you know, Pratt is someone you've talked about a lot.
Yeah.
Like, don't draft the quarterback just for the sake of drafting a quarterback. Pick the guy that you like, that you want. So if they lose both, I mean, hopefully a great wide receiver will still be there in the first round that they can take, and you automatically address a missing weapon with Mike Evans no longer being there. And, you know, I don't think there's any harm in having – it's not the quarterback competition you're going to want, where it's going to be Kyle Trask against either, you know, Ryan Tannehill or Gardner Minshew, as you mentioned. That's not the quarterback competition any Bucs fan wants to see. What I'll also say, though, is you build around the rest of that offense.
Yeah.
Not many people believed in Baker Mayfield last season going into going to Tampa Bay and looking at that draft overall. So it's not the ideal quarterback situation you want, but then you can kind of hold off a year. Who knows? Maybe Kyle Trask does something. Maybe Gardner Minshew becomes the next Baker Mayfield in that type of situation. And you at least stay afloat to keep your team competitive, and then you attack the quarterback situation the following season.
Yeah,
I just don't think it has to be all chips in or all chips out totally in this type of situation.
Reaching for bad quarterbacks doesn't work.
Right? Yeah.
And we saw that with Jameis Winston. Winston had 5 years to get this team to the playoffs, and he was the first overall pick.
Yes.
And you know what? I think he's still better than Marcus Mariota, who was the second, and Mariota had better team success, took the Titans into the playoffs. He had Derrick Henry running back. And I think I think the overall offense and defense of the Titans was better. They were a better team than Tampa Bay was until Tom Brady got here. But this Buccaneer team was growing and evolving. And those draft picks that Jason Light did hit on ended up being that Super Bowl team that just needed a better quarterback. And that's exactly what happened. They switched Winston out, Tom Brady in, boom. And got Gronk and AB,
scenario.
And off they went. And but you're right. You can't reach for a quarterback, even though you need one. It's almost better, you know, to hold your nose and go with the Kyle Trask, Gardner Minshew type of quarterback battle, and make that first round pick count. Draft the next Mike Evans. You know,
Because you never 26 know. Or something. Listen, it's not going to be the Tom Brady situation again, where you get the greatest quarterback of all time. But you never know what happens year after year. Aaron Rodgers became available
for
trade. You know, other quarterbacks get disgruntled with the situation, or maybe they just need a new scenery.
Russell Wilson got traded. I'm not a big Russell Wilson fan, but
and like that, that didn't work out for Denver, but you never know. You never know. So if you build the rest of your team and then you become a quarterback away, you get into those Tom Brady situations again where you go, wow, this team's really good. Yeah. They just need one more piece.
That's a great point. And if you're going to compete in free agency, if you have that Super Bowl-ready team, Tom Brady saw that. He's like, man, this offensive line is good. Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, are you kidding me? And then I can just get Gronk here from the Patriots.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a good defense. Todd Bowles, I went up against him for years in the AFC. He's running the defense. Yeah, I mean, that's the formula, and Jason Light's done that before. And we'll see what happens with Baker Mayfield. And Paul, a.k.a. Florida Dreamhouse, has got a $2 super chat. We appreciate that. Thank you. If Baker or Mike leaves, there's the other leaf, too. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens, Matt, which domino is going to fall first. I believe Mike Evans is going to re-sign first.
Really?
I think he's going to. Yeah. The reason why I say that is because this is such a wide receiver-rich draft. And he's 30. He'll be 31 before he plays a down next year in a uniform, whether it's Tampa Bay's or elsewhere. And I just think that there's also some pretty darn good free agent wide receivers in this class. So as great of a player as Mike is, does a team want to gamble 25, 26, 28 million, whatever the price tag ends up being? Do they want to do that on a player who could be this year or next having that drop off, fall off season where injuries hit, and maybe you lose a step? Hasn't happened yet, and I'm not about to put an expiration date on Mike Evans' career. No way, that's not going to be coming from me. I'm going to bet it for that guy and on that guy until I'm proven wrong. I've just seen his greatness firsthand every minute of his career here in Tampa. But other teams, they'll have to weigh that. Do we want to draft Odunze or a Malik Nabers in the first round, right? Where we have a young guy, maybe the next Mike Evans, where we'll have him for a lot longer and he's on a rookie deal. He won't cost us $26, $28 million. So it will be interesting to see. And I think it's going to come down to what offer the Houston Texans put out for Mike, if they do, and what the Buccaneers offer, and then how many other interested teams there are. I think Baker Mayfield is going to have more suitors and will probably wait until the price goes all the way up, whatever that price tag ends up being. And I think once he sees Mike re-sign, he's going to be more inclined to re-sign in Tampa. But if I had a guess, if I had to place a bet, I would say Evans is going to sign before Baker Mayfield.
That's very intriguing because I actually see it as I think Baker Mayfield is going to be the one that signs first. Now, I think you're absolutely correct that Baker has more suitors than Mike Evans at the moment. But when you look at the teams that need a quarterback, and I'm excluding the teams that are going to draft a quarterback early, the bidding is going to get higher. But I almost look at it as like Shark Tank, for example. Like Baker Mayfield comes in and says, "Hi, I'm Baker Mayfield. Right. This is what I did with the Bucs last season." And that bidding will go high up to a certain point. And then teams will be like, "Ah, oh, that's too much money.
Yeah,
we're going to settle with Gardner Minshew, whatever type of quarterback," where teams go, "I don't want to pay that much for Baker Mayfield." And if other teams start signing a quarterback, drafting a quarterback, whatever, it whittles down who is actually available for Baker Mayfield. So I think Baker isn't necessarily going to jump at the first offer that he gets, but if he finds the first offer that he likes and it's a good, advantageous situation for him, I could see him taking that deal with hopefully the Bucs or Atlanta or Washington or whoever it may be, just to, you know, have that security and peace of mind that we've kind of talked about with Baker, that he can kind of get ready for the next chapter of his career, which again, hopefully is in Tampa Bay. Now with Mike, I totally hear you about teams drafting wide receivers and things of that nature and getting them for younger. But I also think there is a benefit to having a guy like Mike Evans that is fully established. It's almost like we were just talking about with a team that builds out their whole offense and then they just need a quarterback. I think there's certain teams right now that look at their team and say, "Wow, we got a great offense, but we just need that true blue number one wide receiver." And yes, you can draft certain wide receivers, but as we know in the draft, I'm not going to call it a crapshoot, but like sometimes you never know. Like there was that year, the Vikings got Justin Jefferson and I forgot who the Eagles drafted. But like that guy was a complete bust and Justin Jefferson went on to be the best wide receiver in the NFL. You don't want to find yourself on the latter half of that situation. So if you're a team like the Texans that already recently drafted two rookie wide receivers, are you going to draft another one, or are you going to go for the big hit with Mike Evans? Or a team like the Chiefs, who've won back-to-back Super Bowls,
they're
not a wide receiver away. They've been doing it, and they've proved it. But if they say, we really want to improve our offense this year, if they had the money, I think they would be more inclined to go after Mike Evans than to draft one. So I just see Baker signing because the options, I think, eventually will slow down, where Mike, there's going to be a team that says, we need you on our team if we want to reach the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I agree. And it's going to be a very fascinating free agency season for the Buccaneers. And we're going to have a lot of questions for Todd Bowles and for Jason Light. And it's always fun to kind of ask Jason Light and put him on the spot, because the dude has no poker face. Right? It's like, he'll like swallow hard and be like, exactly. He gets that nervous, tick in his voice. But I'm just curious, what is the backup plan if Baker Mayfield decides to go, and if Mike Evans decides to follow? That they would reteam or re-up at the same spot, but free agency is a two-way street, and the Buccaneers, at the same time, they have to be fiscally responsible. As valuable as Mike Evans and Baker Mayfield are, you have to safeguard your salary cap, not just for this year, but in years future. You can't afford to overpay players because it will prohibit you from filling other needs.
Correct.
And if you have too much cap space and somebody has too big of a piece of pie, it can ruin it for everybody else on the team, because for this team to stay competitive in the NFC South and to win it again, there's a lot of holes to fill. Safety. You need probably an upgraded tight end. You need another running back. If Rashad White were to go down, that's a lot of offense sitting on the bench, right? So you need another wide receiver to step up and possibly replace Chris Godwin, or maybe challenge Trey Palmer. You need interior offensive linemen. You need an upgraded center. You need a starting left guard. You need another edge rusher. You could probably use another cornerback, because one of the guys we're going to talk about on the other side of this amazing Celsius spot that Matt's going to read right here is Carlton Davis. And we'll talk about him possibly being a cap casualty after this ad read.
That's right. Yeah, Scott, you were talking about needs, and I couldn't help but think of my own needs. And the thing I need right now is a Celsius Essential, which is the newest line of Celsius energy drinks. The Celsius Essentials, and you see some of the flavors there, the Blue Crush and the Dragonberry, they have 270 milligrams of caffeine. These are bigger Celsius cans. They're kind of like tall boys, essentially. And they are an unbeatable combination of ingredients that support your physical and cognitive performances. So if you need to know where to find the Celsius Essentials, you can pick them up at 7-Elevens nationwide. You can also get their 3-flavor variety pack over at Walmart, and they are rolling out to Amazon online sooner rather than later. You can get all 6 flavors over on Amazon. So whether it's the Celsius Essentials or some of the old school flavors of Celsius, it could be the Fuji Apple Pear, the Sparkling Orange, Sparkling Watermelon, the Tropical Vibe, the Peach Vibe, so many awesome flavors. If you need to know where to find a Celsius energy drink, go over to the Celsius store locator on their website, punch in your address, and it'll tell you the closest location where you can pick one up. Could be a convenience store, health and fitness store, or if you're just lucky enough, it might just be a bodega.
Bodega.
And once you keep going to your bodega and you're like, I love this Celsius, but I need to get it in bulk, so I don't have to make 1,000 trips. I just want to make 1 trip. You can go back to Amazon, buy it in bulk. Get that variety pack, in my opinion, because there's so many awesome flavors. Why limit yourself to 1 flavor of Celsius when you can have tons of flavors of Celsius? And variety is the spice of life. So go to Amazon, do that, subscribe and save, and have it sent to your place of residence whenever you want. Just make sure you're drinking Celsius energy drinks. Make Celsius your number 1 pick. Celsius, the official energy drink of the Pewter Report podcast.
Cam says, Matt and Scott will be super chatting tomorrow. Appreciate
Thank
that,
you, Cam.
Look forward to it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Well, I always love the Super Chats. You know, helps us keep the engine of Pewter Report and PewterReport.com going, which is awesome. Leroy Williams says, Sean Tucker, or did we forget? Yeah, Sean Tucker hardly saw the field. He was kind of the forgotten man during his rookie year. And I think there's a chance that he can be a factor. But, I mean, this was a guy that had plenty of opportunities to climb the depth chart in practice all year, and he didn't. And I'm not hating on Sean Tucker, just reporting the facts. Keyshawn Vaughn was cut. Mm-hmm. It was an opportunity for him to supplant Chase Edmonds. Chase Edmonds was injured. He was out for a while, right?
He was.
And this team never turned to Sean Tucker. So whether it was the pass protection issue or not picking up the playbook, or they just didn't feel that, you know, this guy, you know, had it last year, maybe he gets a fresh start with Liam Cohen. He still has the same running backs coach in Skip Pete, but maybe Liam Cohen can get this guy polished up in year two, and he can be a diamond in the rough. So we'll see.
I do wonder with Sean Tucker, because at the time when he was undrafted free agent, he was an undrafted free agent because he had the heart condition during all the testing and stuff. But there were many, many people that are like, this is a steal for the Bucs, because if he didn't have that issue, he would be like a fourth or a fifth round pick, which for running backs is like pretty good.
Yeah.
So I just wonder, like, if we were looking at Sean Tucker as a fourth or fifth round pick and not as an undrafted free agent, I think a lot of more people would be like up in arms about this type of situation. So he'll be very interesting to watch next year, especially depending on what they do in the draft or even undrafted free agents at running back. Obviously Liam Cohen has a connection to a certain Kentucky running back, but I wouldn't close the book on Sean Tucker by any means, but
he's still in contract.
It is a little bit of what's going on there?
Yeah, with that type of situation. I agree. Jeremy Iowa says, I'm also interested in bringing back Jordan Whitehead to play with Antoine Winfield Jr. again. Yeah, that would be good. Todd Bowles would love that. He loved Jordan Whitehead. He was a great fit at strong safety, and they really haven't had somebody that can play up to that level. They tried it with Keanu Neal. They tried it with Logan Ryan. They tried it with Mike Edwards. They tried it this year with Ryan Neal. And nobody has really played up to the level that Jordan Whitehead did in Tampa.
Yeah.
And the problem is he went to New York and actually, I think, played a little bit better. I think, you know, he showed better hands, came up with some interceptions.
Yeah, four.
Yeah. And so now I think that he's priced himself out of Tampa Bay's budget, which is going to be about this big for safeties each year. It's a position that is actually pretty deep in the draft, and they can probably get one if you remember. Jordan Whitehead, I want to say, was a fourth or fifth round pick.
Yeah.
They've drafted defensive backs on day three. You look at Zion McCollum. He got some play at safety. Is he going to be a safety next year? Probably not. I think Todd Bowles said they love him as a cornerback. They like him as a safety.
Yeah.
There's been some talk that Christian Izian will actually be a candidate to possibly move to strong safety. He played some there at Rutgers, strong safety position and nickel corner, kind of on the same level in terms of playing the interior, you know, in between the hashes. Different, obviously, as you're covering a slot receiver as opposed to having, more duties as a strong safety. But he played that in college. Kayvon Merriweather also was a steady Eddie as a rookie, and where is his ceiling? How much can he improve? So they've got a couple in-house options. They can also address it in the draft and maybe a middle to late round pick. There are some options there. I think the bottom would have to fall out of the Jordan Whitehead market for him to be in the Bucs price range. I just don't think they want to pay like more than $2 million a year for a safety.
Yeah, the market for Jordan Whitehead is very, very interesting this year because he's established himself overall. I'm not going to say like, oh, he's a top five safety or whatever, but he's established himself as a formidable starting safety in this league. And he had four interceptions last year, which was big, but I think a lot of people may recall he had three of those in the first game of the season when the Jets played against the Buffalo Bills. Now, I don't think Jordan Whitehead's going to be back with the Jets because of the contract that he's probably seeking and the fact that the Jets, kind of like with Christian Izian and the Bucs, they were able to get production from an undrafted free agent named Tony Adams, and he's played well enough to take the role of Jordan Whitehead. And we know how it goes in this league. If you get a guy that can play just as well but for way less money, that guy is going to get the opportunity to play, especially when you know, your contract is up, like the situation with Jordan Whitehead. So I, you know, I hope Jordan Whitehead gets his bag, even though he blocked Beater Report for whatever reason, because he's a good player. Now, to bring this back to the Bucks, I'm very interested by the Christian Issien situation, yeah, potentially moving him to strong safety and line up next to Antoine Winfield Jr. at free safety, because, you know, Issien certainly had some, he had some growing pains, but I mean, he had an interception in his first career game in the NFL when he went up against Minnesota. And then I think he had another interception early in the season. Issien, the two things I really like about him is, one, I think he got better as a tackler as the season went on. He had some whiffs at the beginning, but as the season went on, he really honed his skill, honed that craft, which I think is kind of difficult to do for any defensive player, especially defensive back, where you're not making as many tackles as, say, an inside linebacker, because there's hardly any contact in practices anymore. So it's tough to work on hitting a moving target. But the thing I really like about Issien more than anything else is the hustle that he puts into every single play. And I know every single player should hustle. They're getting paid millions of dollars, but some guys just want it a little bit more. And when I watch the tape and I go back and watch Bucks games, I see that with Christian Issien on a consistent basis. And that's important for any player at any position, at any level in the game of football. But especially if you're playing safety and you're going to be asked to do a lot of things just in a base defense, let alone a Todd Bowles defense who loves utilizing his safeties in so many varieties of ways. I like the idea of Issien at safety. See how it works. Don't just lock it into place. But I'd be very intrigued by how that looks. And then obviously you have to find a slot corner and a nickel corner. But I think solidifying that strong safety role is a little bit more important than nickel corner, which can kind of be interchangeable from season to season.
I think just Izian's got to hit the weight room a little bit more. You know,
yeah, I mean, he's on the smaller side. There's you can't teach height, unfortunately.
The only thing small about him is 5'8", man. He is rocked up. This dude, he's built like Jordan Whitehead. Whitehead was built like a little bit of a fire plug, you know. He's muscular guy. I mean, he's got quite the physique for somebody who's vertically challenged. We're sticking in the secondary, and I think one of the guys we need to bring up is Carlton Davis.
Yeah.
Because this could be maybe a bit of a surprise cut for some people, but when you look at his cap number, he's in the final year of his deal. His cap number is $20.37 million. That's an awful lot in this team. Yeah. This team can save $6.3 million in cap space, which they might need. And when you look at Carlton Davis again, his base salary is $14 million. And, you know, do you want to pay a guy? Do the Blazers want to shell out $14 million for a player that is oft injured and just is not a good interceptor, right? He doesn't come up with the takeaways. He had two interceptions last year. That's actually a lot for him. And when you look at Carlton Davis, again, they can free up over $6 million worth of cap space, but he just misses a lot of time. And I think that's the biggest thing is when he, you know, the injuries have kind of accumulated. I think they've caught up to him a little bit. They've taken a toll. When he's healthy, I love the guy. I love his swagger. I think he's aggressive. He's physical. He's a good tackler. But he's 27 years old. And when you look at the cap hit that they're going to take, 20.3 and the base salary, $14 million, that's an awful lot, especially when you've got a guy like Zion McCollum who's ascending. And you look at the touchdown surrendered, the completion percentage, the number of pass breakups. Zion McCollum actually played more snaps than both Carlton Davis and Jamel Dean did last year because they were both injured quite a bit. And McCollum, to his credit, didn't miss a game. Due to injury. And so I think that McCollum has a higher ceiling for sure. He's more athletic. He became a much better tackler this year than he was as a rookie. Now the biggest thing is turn those pass breakups into interceptions. And you look at his history at Sam Houston, he had 15 interceptions in 5 seasons. So he's got a track record of doing that where Davis really doesn't. So I think that could be a surprise salary cap cut for the Buccaneers, just because the Blazers can save some money not having to shell out that contract, that base salary, write that check. And more importantly, you save $6 million in cap room. And he's just missed so many games over the last couple of seasons that, as a matter of fact, he's never started an entire season's worth of games. He's always missed at least two games due to injury dating back to his rookie season. So I just don't see the upside necessarily in keeping a guy that, you know, given his history, he's probably going to miss 4, 5, 6, 7 games and then just not be an interceptor for you.
Yeah, that's the problem for Carlton, is that it's a double whammy. Like, I could justify continuing to pay Carlton on the contract that he's on if, he misses a number of games per season, but he's your team's ball hawk and he takes the ball away and picks up a number of interceptions. Or if it was the other way and he's the cover corner that he is now, which he's great against number ones for the most case, if he was playing every single game. But it's the fact that he's missing time and he's not getting the interceptions. And then you look at the fact that they could save $6.4 million. Yeah. And that may not seem like a ton, but again, in this year's free agency where the Bucs are really fighting for their life,
a new center for this team.
That could bring in a new guard. Center. Or exactly. Like, every single dollar counts in this year's free agency for the Buccaneers. I guess, and I love Carlton too. Like, everything you said about his demeanor, I think he's a great interview in the locker room as well. Yep. I have all the respect in the world for him. He got torched in that game against the Texans, and he wasn't the only guy that got beat up against the Texans.
Yeah.
But he came out like the next week and spoke to the media and faced the music. And I have so much respect for all the players that do that, because no one wants to do that. Hey, you played terribly. What's up with that? Like, no one wants to answer that, but he did. So I have a tremendous amount of respect for Carlton as a player and a person. And you look at the financials and the contract side of things, the only, and again, part of it as well is that you got Zion McCollum right there waiting in the wings. And it's not a question of like, can Zion McCollum do it? Because he proved that last year with Jamel Dean being out and Carlton Davis being out too. My concern about letting go Carlton Davis isn't necessarily anything with Zion McCollum.
Yeah.
My concern is the depth after that. At cornerback.
I agree.
Because Jamel Dean still misses time. And yes, you can.
Yeah.
Again, it changes the draft approach for the Buccaneers. Now they have to look at a cornerback maybe a little bit earlier than they want to. And sure, you got Dee Delaney and a guy like Keenan Isaac, who was on the practice squad, is someone that could be a little bit interesting. But you're pretty, pretty thin at corner after Zion McCollum.
I think the thing about Jamel Dean, too, to answer Callie Buck's question here, is let's talk about Dean's dependability or lack thereof. That's a good point. But the problem is Carlton Davis is in the final year of his contract. He's entering the third year of a three-year deal. So as you get towards the end of it, that's where you can save some money. And they can save $6.3 million of cap space by letting go of Carlton Davis. If you let go of Jamel Dean, who's a little bit younger and is probably a little better when healthy, and he's had some injuries of his own to deal with, but the Buccaneers, his cap number is $14.6 million. They would actually take on an additional $3.5 million worth of cap hit. So the cap hit for Jamel Dean, letting him go, would be $18 million worth of dead cap money.
Yeah.
And that includes an increase of $3.5 million, not a savings of $6.3, but it would cost the Buccaneers
an
extra $3.5 million in cap money.
You're asking, would you rather save $6 million or lose $3 million?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no question, obviously, you're saving.
So to answer Jeremy's question here, couldn't they rework Carlton Davis's deal? Yes, but then you have to extend him to do that. And that's... You know,
I don't think
you want to do that. The older he's going to get, the more injury prone he's probably going to be. The interceptions aren't going to be there, and he's going to be older. When you're older, a corner, you're the slower corner typically. And I just think that the injuries have accumulated to a point where this is probably about as good as the Carlton we're going to get right now.
Yeah.
And they either ride it out one more year, or they draw a line in the sand this year and say, you know, We're going to give Zion McCollum your starting job because we feel like he's the better corner. And then we're going to save $6.3 million. And that's probably the way they might go.
And you know what type of corners are still around late in their career, like even getting to their 30s? Corners that take the ball away. And Carlton does not take the ball away. Because, you know, there are a couple of guys where you go, oh, like, he can get a couple interceptions. Let's sign him to our team. That happens every now and then. But, again, that's the unfortunately not the case with Carlton when it comes to being a cornerback.
Exactly. Well, you know, I wanted to let everybody know about the cybersecurity webinar that's going to take place tomorrow. And this is a great opportunity. If you own a business or even if you're just interested in cybersecurity from your own standpoint, Immuni Financial has a cybersecurity webinar that is free for anybody. You don't have to be an Immuni customer. You can just sign up at immuni.com/cyber. And it's a free 1 hour webinar tomorrow at noon Eastern time. And they've got Josh Moulin. He is their expert speaker. He's got over 20 years worth of experience in cybersecurity. And listen, there's so many scams out there, from email scams to sometimes you get emails where it looks like it's coming from a government entity, especially this time of year. People are impersonating the IRS when it comes to your taxes. And you're not really dealing with the IRS, you're dealing with scammers. So whether it's for yourself or maybe you run a business, this is a great free webinar tomorrow on cybersecurity at noon, February 22nd. All you have to do is go to immuni.com/cyber to register, or you can call Immuni at 1-800-868-6864. One other guy that we need to mention is probably one of the more obvious names. Now, keep in mind, the Buccaneers have already, they're going to process Ryan Jensen's contract after June 1st. So they'll take the majority of his $11.8 million cap hit into 2025. So it really won't affect much of this year's cap space. But the last name we need to mention is Russell Gage, the wide receiver, who just hadn't worked out in terms of the Buccaneers signing him. They signed him to a three-year deal worth $30 million, making $10 million a year after an oft-injured first year in Tampa where he caught five touchdowns but only averaged about 8 yards per catch because he had a hamstring injury. Russell Gage had to take a pay cut down to $7 million. Then he goes up to New York, Matt Happ, and what happened? You were there to witness it.
Yeah, unfortunately, early into joint training camp practices, like, right at the beginning, once they started going up against the Jets, he tore his ACL. And it's just one of those things that absolutely sucks because he was pretty much for his whole career was not injured much, like in Atlanta, and then goes to the Bucs, and you just mentioned his first season there. And, you know, what can you do? He tore his ACL in training camp. He was competing. And, yeah, it just hasn't worked with Russell Gage, sadly. It hasn't worked, but also we haven't really seen what it could be like. But you know, they can save, I believe it's $6.39 million by letting go of Russell Gage. And it's one of those situations for the Bucs where you weigh and you go, well, like, yes, it's sad that Russell Gage got injured. He also, the offense was kind of fine without him. So it's one of those, you save the money and then you can either sign a center, like you mentioned, Scott, or you can at least replace him with a receiver in the draft this year. And I feel bad for Russell Gage, but again, that's just kind of the nature of the game and what they got to do.
Well, he's made a lot of money. necessarily earned it. Not that he, you know, you can't fault a player for injuries really, unless they don't take care of themselves, but a hamstring injury, you know,
ACL,
that's going to happen. The ACL. Yeah. It's not really his fault that he got hurt. It just didn't work out. It's one of those things. J.R. Sweezy, when he signed from Seattle as a guard, he injured his back in the weight room.
Yeah,
and that was a bad signing. Why? Well, that had nothing to do with this play. Just he was hurt.
Mitch Unrein kind of, is another guy. Mitch Unrein, comes to mind. Yeah, I don't think he even played for.
Didn't play.
He got a concussion in that was like my early days of Peter Report. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he's part of like that Bo Allen signing. Like that, they were like really redoing the D line, and Yeah, I think he got concussed in like the preseason, and that was his career. He was done.
Major concussion, ended his career. You're exactly right. So Russell Gage, $8.5 million base salary this year, a cap value of $13.35 million. No thanks. They're going to cut him, and they'll save just under $6.5 million. He'll still have about $6.9 million in dead cap money on the books this year, but you're saving almost as much as he's going to be on the dead cap ledger for. So certainly a move worth doing right there for the Buccaneers.
Thanks to Kathy Gillespie for this $5 super chat. Thank says, you, no disrespect, defense needs work. Nothing like the 2020 team personnel or bowls juggling. Letting go of defensive players needs answers. Well, they're going to be letting go, most likely, of an inside linebacker named Devin White, who was a free agent. So I think we saw some improvement with the defense once KJ Britt was in there, and Devin White was essentially demoted to just being a blitzer on third down and things of that nature. You're going to have a new strong safety in there and potentially a new cornerback and most likely a new edge rusher. So they are trying to move around some pieces. And I still do think the Bucs have a pretty good core nucleus of players with Kalijah Kancey in the middle, and Vita Vea is still young enough. Diaby. And then if they can, extend Antoine Winfield Jr., I think that's a pretty good group to work with on the defensive side. You know, you build it out with a great edge rusher and then kind of go up the middle from there. And, you know, hopefully Lavonte David plays for a couple more seasons and you got your inside linebacker.
Yep. The last name I'll bring up, not expecting him to be released. Certainly don't want to cause a stir or whatever, but Matt, they've got to do something with Chris Godwin's contract. Okay. He's in the final year of his deal. He's 27 years old. I think he'll be 28 later this year. I got to check that. But with Godwin, he's going to have a base salary of $18.5 million. Actually, Godwin, they have him at 28 years old. So he's 28. $18.5 million in terms of base salary. He is the highest paid Buccaneer in terms of base salary this year. His cap value, the highest, $27.5 million. Are they going to extend him? Are they going to restructure him? Are they going to add a void year deal and then have more dead cap money next year, even if he's gone? Big decision. I think they've got to do something to bring that cap number down. He's just sitting on a bunch of cap space there. If they do cut Chris Godwin, they can save $1.1 million. But you're losing a 1,000-yard receiver by doing that. And are you going to get better? Is Trey Palmer ready to be a number two? No. If you draft the rookie, is he going to be as good or better? No. But they've got to do something about that. But that's a topic for another day, because I don't think he's going to be a cap casualty this year. But on tomorrow's show, as we've talked about, the Bucs targets at the Combine, our Combine preview, kicks off in earnest tomorrow at 4 o'clock. And then next Tuesday at 7, Jason Light and Todd Bowles press conference reactions live from Indy. The whole Pewter Report crew, all five of us, will be in Indy from Monday through Saturday. And you can always check out all of our content on pewterreport.com, Matt.
Absolutely. Make sure you're following us on all of our social media, on X, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. We are at Pewter Report, and our YouTube channel is Pewter Report TV. We got various podcast clips, the podcast itself, and a lot of videos and stuff, reaction things, and then obviously interviews and all that stuff in the season with the Bucs, and you get it as well, whether we're at the Senior Bowl or the Combine next week. So please like and subscribe. Please leave a comment as well. You guys were great with the comments yesterday. Yep. I don't mean to comment in the chat. You can do that during the show. I'm saying like once this video is done, go to this YouTube video and leave a comment as well. Helps it out a ton. We're trying to get those followers up, get to that Chris Godwin number of 14,000. That's going to do it for us on today's show. You guys have been awesome again. Can't wait to do it tomorrow at 4 p.m. So for Scott Reynolds, I'm Matt Matera saying thanks, everybody, for watching. And we'll see you tomorrow for another edition of the Pewter Report podcast. Happy half birthday to Mike Evans.
Yes. Out.